If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome back to a very raw edition of Friends From Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it's a podcast that's hosted by me, Kyle Sconawill, and my longtime friend, who is very under the weather right now, as sick as he's ever been, Robert Earl.
Which is saying something.
And you're sick all the time.
Oh, man. Dude, I know. I think my immune system joined the Screen Actors Guild.
It's striking.
It is striking.
Never to be seen again.
Man, I have tried just in the moments before we're recording here, and this is the last thing I'm going to say on it until my voice becomes unintelligible, and then I'll use this as an excuse again. But I've tried every remedy I can think of. I've got the boiling water. I've got the saline spray. I'm like, all of this happened in the moments before I sat down and turned the camera on. So I'm like, it may be a ticking time bomb, but I'm ready to go. And here's the thing that I think will transition us in a bit, although I don't want to foreclose whatever comments you want to make of an introductory nature. I am so stoked on the episode that I just watched that I'm fine. Let's just go, because I'm like, it's carrying me through.
I love, this is the energy I want. When I said it was raw, not only are you sick, but is this the fastest we've ever gone from content to recording? Because even our screeners, when we're in the same location, we have to drive back from the theater.
Oh, true.
So this is,
I mean, we're like under an hour from credits rolling.
It's 9:30 on Thursday evening. So I want to say one quick thing to my future self, to your future self, and to some of our listeners who are now hearing this the day after I put it out. Congratulations on getting to play Spider-Man 2. I haven't done it yet. It technically releases for me, I think, in an hour and a half. Because of a whole bunch of circumstances, I'm not going to get to play it until tomorrow night, Friday night. But again, if you're hearing this, maybe a couple of days ago. And so I will probably just be playing that for hours on end. So check me out on YouTube. Friends From Work on YouTube. I'm playing through it there. I want to talk about it. It's my initial reactions. And I mean, this is a great week. We say it all the time, but this is about as excited as I can get for a game and for the show that's happening right now. So this is fun.
And I think it was Greg at the water cooler, which, by the way, I don't think we've said this yet. The water cooler now has a Twitter handle.
Yes, it does. So
for folks that have enjoyed the news piece of the newsletter, you should go over there and or go onto Twitter and find that. We're also all of that, like we've said, is free. So if you're interested in any of that Substack, we'll get to that. But I think Greg noted this on Twitter that tomorrow is also the release of The Werewolf by Night in color, which I'm actually really excited about.
What a weekend. Also, I think it's your boy's birthday over here. So that's in like two hours. That's a birthday weekend. Werewolf by Night in color, Spider-Man 2,
true.
Loki episode 3. My wife asked, what do you want to do for your birthday? I said, I want to play Spider-Man is what I want to do.
I mean, what else could you, like, so I have this vivid memory, because I know this because Candace and I briefly lived in Little Rock, Arkansas, say briefly, it was like 2 years, but before we moved to Austin. And I had a friend at the time that was way more plugged into video game news than I was, which I feel like I continually need to rely on friends like that because I'm never good at following video game news. But he was like, hey, there's this Spider-Man game coming out that, like, based on what I know about you and how generally obsessive you are when it comes to Spider-Man, like, you're going to be interested in. And this was like 2014 or 2015, like,
oh wow,
when it was like, you know, way down the line. I think 2015. But I, like, from that point on, was tracking the progress of that first game all the way through, to the point where if the first game had been really bad, it would have been a real blow to me. Like,
yeah. You were invested at that point.
A lot of investment. And so, like, I feel like, you know, I played through the first one in like a week, like, or less. And I was in law school, which means I should not have been doing that. But I, like, took off class for a day or two and just played through it. And then it ended. And that was 2018. Like, we had the Miles game, which was incredible. But it wasn't really, like, it was intentionally not an update to the Peter story. And so it's been, like, 5 years of me just waiting for a follow-up.
These video games are so massive that it takes them this long. Like, Red Dead Redemption, I think between 1 and 2 was like 7 or 8 years legit. So for all of our listeners who don't play video games but consume the MCU and are bummed when there's a 2 month break or a 3 month break, imagine getting so into a story, the original video game, and then, like you said, going 5 years or 4 years without an update. That's what was so fun about Miles is you at least got to hear Peter's voice on the phone and have an interaction and see, like, a little bit of how he's doing. And so, again, 24 hours from now, I'm going to be finally back in that world. All the promo and marketing they've done for this game is amazing. They even did, like, a saga so far, like we do, a story so far.
And
it's really well done. It's, like, new liners they've recorded paired with old scenes. And so, man, holy cow. I don't know anything about it other than it's gotten unbelievable reviews, and I'm trying to avoid more and more, you know, spoilers or playthroughs or whatever, but I now learned that Sandman is also in the game, and I saw a clip of what that looks like, and it looks insane. And so I'm just thinking, like, it hit me last night, and this might sound so absurd, but what other twists are in this that we don't even know? Like I said to Annika, what if at the very end of the game you meet a Gwen Stacy? Who also is bit by a spider or something. Like, I'm saying, like, we don't know.
Easy.
I'm saying we don't know that, though. It could be anything like that. And that gets me so stoked.
No, it is.
Then you have to wait 5 more years to see if Gwenny becomes.
I'm excited because this is one that, like, I actually saw. I was looking for something else online today, and I saw a link to the IGN review.
Which was the worst review of all of them, but yes.
Oh, that's funny, because I just didn't even click on it because I was like, you know what? And that's why I was saying, kind of talking about Loki, I had to start a little bit later than you did, so I have not seen the Discord. I have no idea what people are thinking about this episode. But I ever since, like, our you know, Quantumania experience, whatever you make of all that.
You love Unplugged.
When it comes to, like, reactions to things, like, I'm totally fine reading and listening to the reactions, but I'm also at a point where, like, man, it's so boring if we all just wait and we figure out, like, what the reaction is, and then we support it in our own, like, personal ways. It's so much more fun. Like, I would way rather just go play Spider-Man 2, and if I'm like, weird, this is disappointing to me, then, you know, I might go look at some reviews and see if that's reflected. I feel like that's not going to be the case. And I feel the same about this episode of Loki.
So speaking of that, the last thing I want to say before we dive in, I think that you and I need to do an episode like we're doing right now, this raw, but on YouTube. So whether it's episode 5 of Loki or episode 6 maybe or something, I want to do an episode live where our community they can jump on YouTube and we can do this podcast recording. It'll still be a normal episode, but anyone who wants to catch the live discussion, we could all be talking about this, and I could just, you know, read some of the comments to us while we're doing it. So we're going to do that. We're going to do it at some point. I'm going to make it happen. First, Spider-Man. But today, Loki Episode 3. I whenever the episodes are so mind-blowing to me or I enjoy it so much, I like to do this a little bit in reverse. So instead of saying what worked, what didn't work, mm-hmm. and then what happened, I want to start with what in the world could the secret be at the very end of the episode that Miss Minutes is talking about. It's going to make Ravonna very angry. What is that secret?
I thought it was what the recording that we heard in the first episode.
How is that a secret? Just that because
I don't think she knows that she knows him. Like, my sense has been that Ravonna partnered with He Who Remains all the way through, and then at some point he wiped her memory. And
oh, that's a secret, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's the secret.
That her memory was wiped.
Like, that she doesn't know that she had this whole, that she did have a partnership with He Who Remains, which is clearly like a sensitive spot for him.
Okay, break this down to me like I'm 5 years old. Michael Scott, I'm 5 years old. The Ravonna from season one, does she know He Who Remains? Yes or no? Does she know that she has a relationship? No.
No.
Because time doesn't work this way, but at some other point she did have a relationship, but her mind was wiped. Yes?
That's my understanding.
So like, the Ravonna,
I don't think.
So the Ravonna who leaves at the end of season one to go find free will truly doesn't even know what she's looking for.
That's, yeah, I think that's
and
right.
And that's this Ravonna who now goes to 1863 or 18, whatever, 20 something first.
Yeah.
And all she knows from Miss Minutes from He Who Remains is to drop the package off.
Uh-huh.
She doesn't know why. That's part of He Who Remains' plan.
Yeah.
And it's like the TVA guidebook.
Right.
And then the 1868 version, that version that then gets kicked to the end of time in the same citadel, has never seen this before, or at least since her memory's been wiped. This is all new to her.
Right.
And that's the secret.
I think that's right, that she's actually been working with He Who Remains for way longer than she knew. I love this.
I'm just thinking about it. Sorry.
No, I'm glad you said that because I only wrote down a few notes to this episode, but one, you know, we're halfway through now and everything that I ended last episode saying like, look, I think I'm going to be disappointed if I don't get these particular sorts of things. And I got all of those in a way that was way, way more satisfactory than I would have expected. Like, I think I was thinking I would tune in tonight. And if I didn't get that stuff, I would be disappointed. And if I did, I would be like, you know, thumbs up, box checked.
But
I think that, oh, so much. But we'll get into that. But I the note that I wrote down is halfway through season two, I'm so, so, so grateful that really He Who Remains or Kang or Victor Timely or however you want to characterize that, that person is really the only variant that we're getting consistently in season two of Loki. I think at the end of season one, I was really nervous that we were suddenly going to have like an alternate version of Mobius and an alternate version of Renslayer. Like, and then it was going to be this, like, all of their histories were basically erased and it was a blank slate and it was just going to be this like totally new thing, which would be interesting in its own way. But I really like that Renslayer. It's like what I was saying about episode one, where like I like when these shows deal with things like they don't create mysteries where mysteries don't have to exist. Like, I like that we just see Renslayer step straight from her office into the next place now, finally. And like the anticipation's there and the tension's built. But it's like, I love that she has the ability to have a conversation with Mobius and they have all the history that we want them to have. And so there's all like the emotional baggage there. Like, and there's not this whole like, oh no, but I knew you and I used to work with you. Like, I honestly was grateful. I didn't say this last week. I was grateful for the same thing with Brad Wolf. Like, obviously we don't have that history with the character, but I was so relieved when we didn't have to spend 5 minutes with them explaining to this guy that he's actually from the TVA, or like another version of him was plucked and pulled into the TVA. So I was just, I was sitting there thinking halfway through this episode, which is now kind of halfway through the second season, I really like that we're getting the chance to see the characters that we're most invested in grow and their relationships change. And we get to see Ravonna talk about, like, try to explain who Loki is to Victor Timely.
Yeah.
I'm grateful for the way it's been set up, I think.
You've actually referenced that in the past when I had brought up concerns of the multiverse, which is that you said, well, they can focus on the characters you love already and keep pushing your attention that direction so that you never feel that of like, oh my gosh, there's 100 Tony Starks. Like, I just don't care right. about any of these characters. Yeah, they're doing that well here. My second major question, I thought in the comics that Kang was always from the future.
Yeah,
you
I thought
told
about that.
Me that this had to be a time traveling version of Kang. When I had asked this a couple of weeks ago,
right?
And either they're not taking that approach, or this version of Victor Timely is still all an act or a sham. Even to the point where he's about to die, he's not breaking character and is still being deceitful.
So,
like, when he's about to die there at the end, he's talking about how, my heart, I can make my own choice. Either he's being totally genuine, and this is a version of Kang that hasn't been malevolent yet
uh-huh.
or corrupted, or he knows that's what Sylvie wants to hear in that exact moment, and maybe he is from the future, and this is all an act and does have the plan, or they're changing it from the comics.
I think that they are changing it from the comics.
So this would be a non-dangerous version then, because he doesn't have the tech.
Yeah, I mean,
correct.
I think he's yeah. So as a kind of some like high level Wikipedia summary here, like the comics version of Victor Timely is basically it's Kang the Conqueror that keeps fighting the Avengers and he keeps losing and he finally gets fed up and decides that instead of going back from the 31st century to the 21st century or the 20th century, he's going to go back to like a century or two before that, whenever his technology will really be like he can basically just start before there really is any kind of technology or any industry in the way that we think of and take it over from the start. And so he like competes with Edison and Tesla. And the whole idea is like he then works his way into all these industries from the get-go. And so by the time we fast forward to modern day, he's like backdoored his way into S.H.I.E.L.D. and into Stark Industries and all these things that
I didn't know that
would never have developed without his input, you know, hundreds of years ago. And so
he brings his tech with him, or just his ideas in his brain, and then invents the tech in the olden days.
I think probably something of a combination, but I think mostly just the ideas.
Okay.
But that's the comic version, which I do think is very different than what we're getting here. Like we know enough about this Victor Timely to know that he is a con man. So I think that we can't rule out entirely that he's playing Sylvie and playing us. But I think that he's genuinely surprised by what he learns. Like, I think your other option of him just being like just a variant of this person that was born in the 1800s instead
like,
of in the
like Tony Stark's father. The technology, I'm limited by the technology of my time.
Yeah, well, which was not the only phase one line shout out that we got in this episode. Did you catch the other one?
When they're looking at the Thor statues, something?
Well, it's the same presentation, or it's in his kind of initial presentation that we saw clipped in Quantumania, but he says that you may think this is science fiction,
but it's always
fiction until it's fact, which is like the science line fact. From the first Thor, which had to be intentional.
And somehow we got to work in Dark World here. And then that we'll Jane there. Goes on to Dark World. Yeah. Okay, there you go. So then let's also quickly talk through what each character's motivations are here, because was it a little bit strange that, not in a bad way, but Loki and Mobius and Ravonna kind of want the same thing for Victor Timely, right? They all want to bring him to the TVA. Loki right. wants to do it just so he can use his temporal aura, correct, to fix the loom from breaking, and then apparently just send him back, I guess. And Ravonna wants to do it with Miss Minutes to ultimately overthrow the TVA and get back to where they were.
I don't even know if Ravonna knows what she wants, but I think you're right. I mean, I think she enjoyed the status quo. She wants to just be the one that's in control. So I think, like, there's this weird tension between her and Miss Minutes and who is trying to steer the ship. But I still don't, like, I think the whole point of the ending is that Ravonna, up until that point, has kind of just been, she was taking instruction from Miss Minutes, and then she just knew that she had to bring some version of He Who Remains back to the TVA to try to reestablish order. But she says something about the temporal loom, I thought that this was interesting. Like, she notes that it is breaking down. Like, she's aware of the issue that OB has outlined to Loki and Mobius, which I thought,
and she's like, seen it enough to be like, it's very similar to your invention.
Well, but how would she know that it was breaking down? Like, she left before the multiverse really, like, sprung forth, right? Like, I feel like that was all
Miss Minutes has told her, or she's checked in, bounced in there a couple times, or
I guess Miss Minutes is probably, I guess it's probably built into the plan that He Who Remains gave to Miss Minutes.
Which is another thing I want to talk about. Before I talk about Miss Minutes, I also thought Sylvie was a massive standout here, because in episode 2, she's immediately kind of turned off and angry at Loki. And there was a little bit of a feeling of, why is she so mad at him? Like, the last time they saw each other, they kissed. It was a, I want to protect you kind of thing. Felt like they were working towards a relationship of sorts. And then she's immediately totally fed up with Loki when he shows up. I think this episode gave even more clarity to she just hates the TVA and what Loki now represents in what she determines as defending the TVA.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I thought that made it a lot more clear. And I thought her performance was way better here. She was good then too, but I bought everything about, like, that conversation she has with Loki in the Ferris wheel was so captivating to me.
Yeah.
Where she's like heartbroken that he's even defending it and he doesn't get it. And I love that there's a part of me that is wondering if she's actually correct and Loki is being played a little bit. Because again, it kind of came back to the same Lost season 5 thing, which is she says, if you had not interacted with this one at all, he would never have known or gotten to this point. But then it's actually not Loki. It's Ravonna doing it. And Sylvie doesn't know that.
Right.
But again, is it that interaction that is setting it up to be a cycle, basically? Like, are you the one causing it?
I mean, it radically recontextualizes the see you soon moment at the end of the season 1 finale, right? Like, because what you're talking about, like, all these things, like, whether they were put into motion before and what impact Loki or Ravonna or Sylvie are having on them, like, it's becoming clear. Like, the sense that I got in season 1 was, he knew that somehow, you know, it was inevitable that he would wind up again right back where he was. But I think what we've seen now is, it wasn't just that he knew that, it was that he had ensured that. Like, he had set kind of a failsafe.
That was one of my notes. I love that he has a plan.
Right. I think that changes the way we have to see He Who Remains, because there was this sense that, like, oh, he doesn't really care and he is kind of ultimately benevolent. And then you have to ask the question, like, is he just so convinced that the TVA is the only way to maintain the safety of the universe or multiverse, however you want to think about it? Or is he just this, like these same traits we're seeing in Victor Timely, where he refuses to have a partnership. Is that just He Who Remains, to where he is convinced that it's not like that's the safety of all, that's just ultimately there's not a world. Like, and then it makes you think, did he always, like, did he know ultimately that Loki or Sylvie was going to kill him?
Well, and then I want to know, what is his actual plan then with Victor Timely? Like, how is that the plan to give him the book? Did he then plan that they would capture him and bring him to the TVA and then something's going to happen there? Is his plan for Victor Timely to ultimately just replace He Who Remains? That's what I'm saying. Like, how is he protecting it?
Yeah.
We don't know yet.
It's got to have something to do with the temporal aura, like in something that happens whenever he's allowed to access it. Like, I feel like there's... I don't know. I mean, I could see a lot of different ways that would play out.
Well, and there was so much of the battle of Victor Timely saying, I didn't do that. Like, for example, right. Ravonna gave him the guidebook, and then he's like, these are all my ideas. But they weren't his ideas. They weren't that variant's ideas, right?
Right.
Is he putting that together, or is he still playing dumb? These are all the things I'm, you know.
I mean, because he has, like, there's, like, the TVA handbook that he was given by Ravonna. And then he also has been, like, creating his own inventions that correspond.
But when they're opening is that from the guidebook? Like, the drawings and stuff? Or that was him sketching on top of the guidebook?
You see what I'm saying? No, I do. I actually wasn't clear on that point. I think either way it probably means the same thing, and that I think what he's saying is he felt like he had all these ideas, but he just didn't have any like means for them. But I wasn't sure if that was something where he had drawn into the handbook or if he had like created his own in conjunction. I think it's that he had sketched like in the margins kind of a thing, but I don't know. I'm sure that somebody knows and is like already screaming at their...
Here is something I am so freaking stoked about the rest of the way. This episode did a really fun job of showing this con artist from the 1800s, and I'll get into all that in a second, but it was kind of almost goofy. He's playing dumb. He doesn't know stuff or whatever. Right. I was kind of waiting for a moment where, like, you know, like the pruning thing is to his head and he kind of does a sly smile or like look at the camera of like, and it was going to be like he snaps out a character and it's like he knows what's going on, like he's playing this all, but we didn't get it. I still think that moment is coming, because it was fun to see a totally goofy variant of Kang, but we still, I guess since Quantumania, haven't seen the true like terrifying Kang, because He Who Remains came off as kind of benevolent, blah, blah, blah. I'm really excited to see like that. There's going to be a moment like that. Like something's going to happen in episode 4 where instead of him being like, oh, I don't know why I'm here in TVA, he's going to like walk in and do the Kang the Conqueror thing or something, you know, with his technology. Something's going to happen. Or he's just going to give the camera a look where like we know, like, okay, he's on to us and he's playing them or something. And I'm so stoked for that moment.
Here's the interesting thing, though. I was actually pretty surprised, because what we were talking about, the difference between the comics version and what we've gotten here so far. Like, we did see a younger version of him, ostensibly at least, that book. Like, so it could be shown that was not what we thought it was. Like, it's not like anybody ever referred to that person we saw as a kid as Victor. So, like, maybe that's all, like, a red herring. But I do feel like they're at least really wanting us to think he is, like, he was born in the 1800s. He's not play acting.
Right. But then how is he a part of the other He Who Remains' plan then? Because he doesn't know.
That's what I'm kind of fascinated by. Like, why would he pick of all... If He Who Remains was actually...
Yes, why would he pick that one?
Like, and maybe he was benevolent ultimately. Like, maybe like he was twisted and he was a villain the way that he was saying to Loki and Sylvie, but he actually does believe that the TVA has to exist, but that it can't exist in the form that a more like conquering variant of himself would allow it to. And so he intentionally selects this variant of himself that is going to always be like a little bit more naive and a little bit like more moldable, like less assertive, because I feel like we also get those characteristics here where it's like he's got the stutter. He has enough of Kang in him to where we do see that he's like pulled one over on people like time and time again.
Sure.
No pun intended. But also he's not like this kind of steely, like stern guy like we would see with Kang.
Yeah, right.
Like, I mean, like, I will say this, like, we see him run away from a lot of people in a way that, like, I don't think we've not seen. And again, you could be totally right. And like, it could be an act, which I would be delighted by, but I could also see that being the point, that he picks a variant, this one that, for like, in the same way that Loki was like in this one instance born a Sylvie, then in this one instance, you know, Nathaniel Richards or whoever they decide this person is was born in the 1800s.
This is a super random Easter egg my brain is going to right now. In the Loki season one finale, where he is explaining to Loki and Sylvie how he got there, and he's using that weird tempad that creates the images.
Mm-hmm.
Don't quote me on this. I'm asking you this. Isn't the first person that he shows he creates with that thing when he says, at first we were friendly, doesn't he have the same hairstyle as Victor Timely? I feel like that little artifact has that like spiked hair thing. No?
Oh, I don't know. That's a really interesting idea, though. Like, that's a variant that he actually interacted with.
I'm just thinking, like, maybe was that intentional? Was that intentional? Yeah. Would they have put that in there intentionally to be like, that was the variant that at first was benevolent? And
I mean, it would have been a really easy thing to...
Right, and then maybe he remains knows that because of his benevolence. It's going to lead to the other he who remains wherever he's at taking over or capturing Goliath or whatever. I know that's way out there. I don't know.
No.
Loki and Mobius's plan is very basic on paper. They need him because they need his aura to open this thing and stop the loom from overheating or whatever.
Right.
That's very obvious. I think it's obvious kind of what Sylvie wants, which is like, she's just so fed up with all of this. And I think it's honestly obvious what the people in the TVA are trying to do. The one variable is Miss Minutes Ravona and this version of Victor Timely. Like, how do they play into any of this? Like, why, what do they want? How does it tie into He Remains? How could he have intentionally set that up? And if he intentionally set it up, for what purpose? To replace him, to take down the TVA, to let the other versions of Kang out? We don't know.
Right.
I think there's going to be a sinister twist in here somewhere.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Okay. I do, what you were saying earlier about Sylvie, I felt the same way. Like, I like that I had more reason to, I was more annoyed with her here. Where I was just like, they're trying, like, everyone's trying to do something, and you're the one person that has decided it's wrong, and therefore, like, you refuse to let Loki and Mobius just do this thing.
But she also gets a good glimpse of how much it's a clown show.
No, and to your point, like, I do have this suspicion that ultimately we're going to realize that Sylvie was right all along, and that everyone has been, like, running the exact track that was laid out for them. But the thing that I appreciate here, when you're talking about like getting the insight into where she's coming from, I like that for Sylvie. Like, we saw like through the entirety of the Infinity Saga that Loki was so like, he had an axe to grind with really the entire kind of Asgardian system, and felt like he was owed more than he was given. But it like manifested in all these different ways throughout. And I feel like what's interesting is seeing Sylvie channel all of that, but towards the TVA. Like, she really has no reason to hate Asgard or Odin or Thor in the way that Loki did, because she was taken before any of that would have really affected her.
Yeah.
But instead, she's felt like forever aggrieved by the TVA, which is also like a much easier thing to villainize, because in terms of the things that they actually did to her. So I feel like we were intentionally kind of given a glimpse of, like, in the same way that last episode, Loki lays out for Mobius the way that his own, like, failure to, like, control his own reaction to things, like, led to the Avengers, and, like, these great, like, kind of moments of reflection. I feel like we're seeing that with Sylvie, but as to the TVA.
Yeah.
And I think she's kind of seeing it in herself, like in those moments with Victor, where she's realizing now she's becoming obsessed, and that's not something that fits with, like, the goals that she's stated, like wanting to experience everything and just get out of it. Like, now she's trapping herself in the same kind of cycle that we talked about in, like, Loki episode 5 of season 1, with this, like, we always have to do the same thing, and it's this mad grab for power. And, like, I think that it's really subtle and really effective writing, I think, for Sylvie especially.
Maybe that's what I was feeling, and you're just putting better words to it. I just felt like her role was elevated. It was elevated in some way this episode. That's part of it, I think, for sure. I like seeing her exasperation with the whole setup and finally resonating with it a little bit of, like, it's hard to explain, because they told us that her life was taken away by the TVA, but I think they use some of the, like, goofy nature of the little conflict and the way Miss Minutes and Ravonna are kind of crushing on Victor Timely and all of this stuff to kind of paint this goofier picture. And then they have Sylvie walk into it and she's able to look at it. And I can see it from her perspective, which is like, this is so dumb. Everything you're doing is like, right, you're messing it up, and this looks dumb. And, you know, everyone wants their own thing. And let's continue to geek out about this after a quick word from these sponsors.
You were talking about Sylvie recognizing the goofiness of the situation in general, mm-hmm. but I like that in showing that they don't fall into that same trap of making Loki look silly. Like, again, okay. It's like what we talked about last episode. I love that that's continuing. Like, it's this, I felt like he was as competent as ever this entire episode. Like, he's singular in his focus. Like, we see that he's, like, constantly kind of just dispatching enemies, like, kind of left and right, mm-hmm. but in a way that's, like, morally more or less fitting with Loki. It's just, it feels like a nice way of, like, you see it from her perspective, but you also see it from his perspective. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like it's, again, the reason I'm impressed with the writing here is they found a way to kind of make her point of view so compelling without undermining his.
Annika pointed out this tiny detail when Ravonna is holding Victor hostage and Mobius and Loki run in. They're like, whoa, easy, easy. And Annika turned to me during that entire disagreement and she goes, why doesn't Loki just do magic and get rid of Ravonna real quick? And then right when she said that, if you noticed, Loki's hands start glowing green. So that's exactly what you're talking about, which is like, yes, right, he was preparing. I can just remove her from the situation if I need to. And I like seeing that a little bit. It's not the, what's going to happen? It is a more competent version of him. I need to give a couple of small shout outs, including the music for me. You know, mm-hmm. on this podcast, we've always liked Natalie Holt. I thought the imagination to do the 1800s ragtime piano version of the Michael Giacchino title score was so fun to get us in the right mindset. And I thought that there was this incredible piece of music that's going to have to go on our playlist. I have no idea what the track's called at this point. When a child version of Victor gets the book, it's playing this really beautiful cello piece.
Oh, yeah.
And then it turned into an incredibly epic, dark, low-key title card. So shout out Natalie. I think she's doing some really imaginative stuff.
Agreed.
And I appreciate that. By the way, as a little promo for her and for us, we will be talking to her in the upcoming weeks. So if there's any questions you want us to ask Natalie Holt, get those in at the FFW Podcast on social media or on Discord or our website, theffwpodcast.com. But that'd be fun to talk to her again. I can't wait to ask her about how she is morphing some of the ideas she had from season one and the different takes she has on them now in season two. So that's a big shout out. I also just really want to give a shout out to the entire aura and sets and costume and design of the 1800s. It feels like they actually went all out with it, and I loved it. To the accents, to the hats, to the look of the Ferris wheel. I didn't think anything looked off. The old buildings, walking through that. And then even when they had to throw in CGI of Miss Minutes, it was awesome, terrifying, looked cool, funny. Just visually, down to the costumes, I was so impressed with capturing an entire aura. Yeah. And then this is something that I think is an improvement over season one. It's something combining the sets and the camera work. I don't know if you want to call that production design or cinematography. Mm. There's just something to, like, this is a really weird detail, but when they're in that temporal aura loom room and they're trying to figure out the problem and OB's saying, we're all going to die, they can do some camera tricks where they, like, on one side of the building, OB's over there, and then B12's on the other side, and they kind of slow one shot panned back to B12. And in doing that, keeping the one shot, it gave us perspective of the entire room. And, like, Mobius is talking to us from the other side of the room.
Oh.
And all that made me think is they built that whole set. That whole thing is built because they're one-shotting this and showing us the whole room. So I know it's a weird detail to point out, but I just think the sets and the costume and the camera work is dialed up a notch from season one, in my opinion. So props to all those people.
Yeah. No, I've noticed that every episode.
It's cool.
I think I mean, this is maybe as good a time for me to say it as ever, because we're kind of getting closer to the back end here. I just thought the way it looked, the pacing, the writing in terms of the story structure, but also the dialogue, the directing, which we have a new director in terms of, I don't know that we've had this director on any MCU project before.
No, and she killed it.
Oh, absolutely. But, and co-wrote the episode I saw, but
I'm going to get her name correct while you're thinking. So keep talking.
Oh, nice. But man, this is just one of the best episodes of Marvel TV that we've gotten.
Oh, hello. Period. Hello.
I think it just is. I'm just thinking back to, like, this is up there with the best of each series for me. Whether we're talking like Loki and WandaVision or the really high points of Moon Knight and Ms. Marvel, like, I just think that this is exactly what I needed this show to give me this week to just be super revved up to move forward. I liked this more than the first episode, frankly.
Kasra Farahani is the director. First time directing stuff in the MCU, so shout out to her. Yeah, incredible. And I love that you loved it more than one. I'm not even in the headspace to rank yet, like the episode by episode thing. But yeah, that's one of my notes again.
In terms of my reaction, I did not feel this revved up after episode one.
You're not going to be able to see this, but I'm showing this to anyone who's watching on YouTube or Spotify. One of my notes is, I'm glued. So I'm with you. Like, the dialogue and pacing has gotten me entirely glued to my screen, which is a positive. Mm-hmm. I can't pull my phone out. I'm not talking to somebody else. I'm just trying to figure out where we go with this thing.
Right.
Another.
I rewound it several times.
I rewatched the last scene again because I thought that secret conversation was, because that's another whole thing. That's a whole nother thing that they show up at the end of time and Miss Minutes said a couple things. She I wrote down the line. She said, Ravonna said, I had him under control until you sabotaged me and made fools of us, which made me think like, gosh, they might have a way deeper plan than even we're seeing.
Right.
But that whole aspect of the show, I also really enjoyed. I found the Miss Minutes being like intimately crushing on Victor Timely. I found it really funny and terrifying. Mm-hmm. Like when she started going on the whole thing about, I have chills right now, about the, why didn't you make me into your girl and your face? I was like, this is getting, I have chills right now. It's like, this is getting weird and I love it. Like, this is getting creepy and what are you about to do? Like, I'm terrified about what's about to happen. And then I start thinking like, if she became a person, what character would that be? Like, maybe it's someone we would know or reckon. Like, I don't know. I just started being like, this is wild. What if Miss Minutes is like the ultimate villain behind all of it? And she's AI that he had created.
Right.
I don't know. I thought that was a funny storyline too. It was like funny at first. It was, exactly. It was like funny, but then it turned into kind of Ultron-esque. And I was like, whoa, this is getting weird. I loved it. I loved it.
I have to say, like we talked about how, I think back when we were talking about Quantumania, the casting of Jonathan Majors, just in how compelling the performances are. And the real genius in casting a character actor like that, and it's the reason why that is the sort of actor you will always have to have in this role, like in a role that is so variant focused, whatever happens moving forward, I think is how great he is at differentiating each variant. Like, and this is not me ranking, you know, one actor against another, but I just think like there are other moments where we've gotten the same actor playing kind of different versions of themselves throughout the MCU or in other projects. And it's like, even like Tom Hiddleston, it's kind of like, like President Loki, you know, that we see in Loki episode 5 is kind of Loki. But I love how much, like, we noticed this with, like, He Who Remains the Kang, and then we got a little glimpse of it in the Quantumania post-credit scene, the first one. But then also here to get, like, this other totally different version.
You could like almost write the personality quirks of all three at this point.
Yeah. Like, I you know, again, that's writing for sure. And so I'm not saying that the actor should be given all of that.
No, but also
I do
his
think
acting.
That's, I think it's, he's good at finding these sort of micro expressions. Like I don't, my guess would be like based on our conversation with Jeff Loveness and the way that he talked about him kind of taking elements of the script that he wrote and making them new. Like I would guess that Victor Timely was not necessarily written to have some of the kind of tics that Majors instills. Like I think that those are little things that make the character both memorable and distinct. And I think that that's where like, that's where when we go all the way back to the beginning of talking about how do you kind of one up Thanos and do something different instead of just trying to like do Thanos, but stronger, like the Josh Brolin Thanos performance was so commanding and so iconic in its own way that to instead find a villain that's just kind of endlessly changing.
Sure.
Like, regardless of what happens, the genius of that approach, both from like a drafting perspective and a casting perspective.
Well, and like I said earlier, I'm really ready for a terrifying one.
Mm-hmm.
Like Kang the Conqueror was that for sure. I'm not belittling that movie at all or that performance because you know I love it. But like an unleashed version of that Kang the Conqueror. I'm getting close to really wanting that, really needing it.
But
I think it's coming. I think it's coming. I think they're pacing it well, right? Because we know that Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars are coming. So this is not going to end Kang, this show, right? So they have to pace us out this way. But if you zoom out, I'm right at the point where I'm needing a little bit of tie-in. I'm needing a little bit of multiversal answers, and I'm needing to see the terror actually from a Kang. And that's what I loved about this. I feel like we are finally getting that. Like, even just seeing Victor Timely and the reference, the shout out to Thor and that statue and Odin. Uh-huh. I don't know. I just felt like I was back in the MCU, and getting a little bit of direction helped.
Yeah,
I was
like,
oh, I kind of get now what's happening, and I get what they're trying to stop him for. And I don't know. Just, it's the very beginning of me hopefully kind of coming back to it of like, okay, there's a little bit of a
I
like
can
a
see
plan
where
they're
saying this is such a linchpin, like it, for the multiverse saga. And I, to your point, and this is not, I think on the same page with you whenever it comes to Quantumania, and that, I mean, all people have to do is go back and listen to our first episode there. Cause I stand by all that, but regardless, I was just thinking, like, halfway through this episode, I found myself wanting to go watch that movie. And
let's go.
It makes me wonder. I think that there are a lot of people that would say that that's a much worse movie than the first Thor. And I'm not going to get into all that here.
No,
but I
will get into it. No, it's not. Keep going.
I never had any desire or really any like enjoyment watching that first Thor movie until I had kind of gotten the investment later on. And we've talked about that. The same in some ways for Chris Evans as Captain America. And I just think this is different because we're talking a villain rather than a hero.
Sure.
But a villain that could have such a large role that I do wonder if that starts to reframe the way people view that movie in 5-10 years.
I've become the ultimate killing machine. that's what this is? That's what this is? I loved it. I am beyond excited to see where it goes. I'm beyond excited to play Spider-Man. I'm excited to watch Werewolf by Night in color.
Yes.
Do you have anything else? That's all I had. I loved it.
No, same. I think the only thing about Werewolf by Night that I want to note, just because this is the last time we'll talk to people before it releases, something released a ways back, a couple weeks ago, I guess, where Chiquino talked about that process. And I do want people to know this is not just a Marvel, you know, took off the black and white filter and released it kind of cash grab thing. Like, I think my understanding is Chiquino has gone back through like frame by frame and decided on coloring for this in a way that he thinks will, in the same way that he was kind of trying to harken back to black and white horror stuff with the original version, harken back to like Technicolor and some of these kind of like Roger Corman or not. Yeah. Roger Corman era stuff. Anyway, so I think it's like a kind of a new creative endeavor of his. So I'm actually interested to see some of the choices that he makes there. And just the trailer that I saw released, like, I think it's a fun idea. I'm glad they're doing it. And I'm glad, if nothing else, that it's giving that project kind of a second life, because it's one that I think has been slept on to some degree.
No doubt. My last pitch in closing this episode is, if you do want to hang out on YouTube, I would love to have you. I know for a fact Friday night, the 20th, around 8 p.m. Central, I'm going to turn on the game for the first time. So if you're not a video game player and you just want to see what all the hype is about, or if you are playing the game yourself and you're ahead of me and you want to see my reaction to whatever part, like what that's like, or you're just an MCU fan who doesn't give a crap about the game but just wants to hang out and chat MCU while we're playing, I would love to have you. I'm excited about this new streaming setup I have. And obviously, I've said this 100 times, I can't wait to actually, as a fan, you actually asked me this. I said, dude, I'm so stoked. And you said, about the streaming side of it or about the game? And I said, 80% of it is just personally, I'm excited as a fan. Like, I want to see what's going to happen. The first game is so well written. Such a good story that I cannot wait to follow up on it. And then 20% of it, I'd love to see what it's like with doing this live, hanging with people. So that's my last pitch. Check us out on YouTube. the FFW podcast or search Friends from Work, and you'll see this little icon. If you click notifications, I think, or subscribe, you can get notified when I go live. So that way, wherever you're doing, you can be like, oh, he's going live on Spider-Man. Here we go. So anyways, this is a really fun era. I can't wait to see episode 4. From what I've heard from the people that have seen all 4, which you and I have not seen all 4 this time, that the 4th episode is like a game changer. It's supposed to be unbelievable, the best of the bunch. Who knows?
Oh, man.
You know, who that's knows? Exciting. It might be different expectations, but I'm really stoked to see what that's like. And you know what? You know, they have a good rap right now with episode 4s, if you think
that's
back
true.
To Moon
that's
Knight
very
and whatnot.
True.
So kind of the pivotal
really
moment
across
there.
The board, I think.
So
I'm excited as well.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. Please rate, review, subscribe to this podcast. Tell your friends about it. Click subscribe right now, right below, and we'll be right back here talking about Loki episode 4 next week here on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.